You gonna do an intro?
Are you doing the intro?
Well, I was just gonna say, Chris, let's talk about our podcast and the audience and the reason why we are doing the podcast.
Great topic. So that was the intro. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Hobo CEO podcast.
With Nico and Chris.
That's right.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers. Or no trousers at all.
Straight out of Chiang Mai, digital nomad and hobo capital of the world.
Indeed, hobo hotspot. So why are we talking about this? It's not as self-indulgent as it sounds, because I think it touches on our sort of philosophical direction and our thinking, rather than us just pressing the record and talking gas for half an hour.
I'm genuinely curious about these topics.
So obviously there's there's some real standard reasons for doing a podcast, which you may or may or not have already picked up. Let's just quickly go over them now. So anyone who's thinking about doing a podcast, we might confirm in their mind that it's a good idea. So, on a very basic level, you practice your communication skills.
Exactly.
Also, there's a potential to build an audience if you're doing something that's super interesting rather than pseudo-philosophical babble like us. But seriously, there's a definite potential for building an audience. I know several people who reach thousands of listeners every week. Thirdly, if you have some sort of business, it's a great way of creating a new marketing channel. And tied on the back of that is the fact that when you're listening to somebody on a podcast, you get a much more personal connection than if you're just reading their words on the page. You know, we're still animals, we're still these kind of basic human cavemen, and basic stuff like hearing someone's voice, seeing them in person, it has a real tangible effect. Therefore, audio trumps text.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some real basic reasons. But would you have any more basic reasons for doing a podcast?
I think for us, these should cover the main reasons.
Out of those reasons, which ones are we really interested in?
I think we are not mainly concerned with building an audience. We put more importance on being free in the kinds of topic we talk about.
Mm.
So our main concern is not, I don't know, like educating people, delivering value, giving people nice and handy how to so and so in X amount of steps kind of podcast formats. We tried.
Yeah, we did try doing structured podcasts.
Yeah, let's be a little meta on the podcast. We started out and we tried to follow some of the more common recipes of podcasts and how they are structured.
The five ingredients for location independence.
For example, like yep.
But now we're doing this more conversational format. But what I wanted to say is we might not be trying to deliver value and actionable steps to build your business and whatnot. But I think we hope that our musings, our beard stroking, does have a tangible effect in the listener's ear. It does get those cogs clicking
mm-hmm.
in the brain and liver or whatever organs.
And then, yeah, and then there's not only the improving of our own communication skills, there's also the being on record and then having to listen to yourself afterwards, it kind of in a very dry way, strict way, forces you to be more concise and to become self-aware. We just talked about that. You become aware of speech patterns, intonation patterns.
Your and things like
yes.
that.
Yes.
And of course, it prepares you for the TV, inevitable TV appearances we'll be making.
Exactly.
And celebrity awards and whatnot. So one of the things we just mentioned before we pressed the record button was how none of our friends listen to our podcast.
It seems, apparently.
Apparently. Well, I'm sure one or two do here and there. And of course, because they're all running businesses and they've got much more pressing needs that they want to put their attention into.
Or they have to listen to our ramblings off the record.
All the time.
All the time. So they're not really interested in getting the, yeah.
So that made me think, what is important in somebody's life? Obviously, if you're an entrepreneur, then building your business is going to form a big part of your life.
Yeah.
But I think that our conversations, Nico, we're, in a sense, we're more fundamental than that. You know, there's this idea that philosophy is like the most basic fundamental thing to get right first before you build anything on top of it. Like, otherwise you end up pursuing riches or, you know, you might be acting for reasons you don't really fully understand or even aware of. Whereas digging into the philosophical gold mine, you've got this potential of uncovering things and significantly changing your outlook, your perspective, and then for your direction. So in a sense, what I'm saying is listening to our podcast is the most essential thing anybody in the universe can do.
If they're interested.
No, no, even if they're not interested.
Even if they're not interested.
Okay. Everyone should be listening to the Hobo CEO podcast.
I think one of our main advantages is that we very, there's a word I'm missing, but we have really nothing to sell.
It's like, apart from our info product, which is coming.
Apart from our, yeah. No, but seriously, I mean, the podcast isn't designed to sell something, and it's not the reason why we do it. One of the things that also gets back to us, apart from, like, you know, us improving our learning to be more concise and communication skill improvement, is that some people have reached out for us, reached out to us. Yeah. So we met a couple of very interesting and nice people through the podcast because we do the podcast. Oh yeah, it's a totally, like, I have to add that that's another reason why to do a podcast. It's a status. it's a totally a sign of status.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we don't have fancy cars and shit, but if we, if you go somewhere and you say that you're doing a podcast, even in our circles where a lot of people actually already do podcasts, still being on a podcast seems to be impressive. Yeah. I was wondering, I didn't expect it that much myself, but you remember when we hit some of the business meetups in Berlin, for example, yeah. And then we even, like, this is really interesting, talking about name dropping. Some people used us then and said, oh, and by the way, this is Chris and Nico from the Hobo CEO podcast. They used being acquainted to us and mentioning that we do a podcast to people who have actually no concern with our podcast and our personas whatsoever as a way to impress.
We're rock stars.
Totally. So you basically started talking about the audience because you said, apparently none of our friends are listening to the podcast.
I know Jesse listens to the podcast.
Jesse? Well, you know,
I mean, actually,
if only Jesse
was listening to the podcast,
Jesse,
that would be worth a million listeners.
That's true. And you know
what? This is Jesse Lawler, by the way.
This is Jesse.
He does Smart Drug Smarts podcast.
Yeah, The Dominator.
Amongst a million other super impressive things.
And here's something I got to tell you. I talked to a bunch of people who hang out and have been hanging out in Saigon with Jesse. You know, there's some really badass, productive entrepreneurs in Ho Chi Minh and, you know, the energy level there. And everybody seems to agree that nobody works as much and as hard as Jesse. He seems to be doing nothing else than working. So if he finds the time and puts our podcast in his list of priorities, that's got to be, I don't know, that's worth, I don't know.
I think we can just retire. The value of that is retirement. We've hit the jackpot there.
And then we are there might be other people who we don't even know. Like, that's one of the things I'm curious about. Who out there is listening to our podcast? And why are people enjoying it?
So, peers versus audience,
yeah. So, seconds before we hit the record button on this current episode, I was saying that I'm not quite sure whether the podcast is and should be designed and, you know, for peers or for our audience. Now, we just said there don't seem to be a lot of our friends listening to the podcast. We also met people like, for example, Chris Dane through the podcast, which I definitely would call a peer in terms of what he's doing. Or I'm becoming more aware that I personally don't really have an audience. I have a bunch of friends and people in the same circles and communities and so on, and they sometimes read stuff on my blog, or they might listen to the podcast from time to time, but I don't have an audience in the sense of the word where there's like people following me or us. Maybe this is a misconception, but I don't think there's people out there that are looking up and thinking, whoa, these guys have, not that they're saying that, but they're thinking something along the lines that we have figured something out that they haven't.
I think it's a misconception.
You think?
I think it's not a Boolean thing. It's not an audience or no audience. It's just the size.
Ah.
And it's just not as big as, say, you know, Dan and Ian's.
Okay.
Or Jody's or something. That's Jody Ettenberg and Dan and Ian behind the Tropical NBA podcast. It's the same, you know, imagine being in a band. Like, okay, you can think one of the sort of bands on the top 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
They've got a big audience.
Yeah. Know,
that's like the Boolean on, but it doesn't really switch off. You get smaller indie bands which have a few thousand fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people buy their music, people turn up to their gigs. And then you get kind of bands which are just sort of starting out and stuff. And it's maybe mostly their friends in the gig. But still, there's not a point where they suddenly switch over to like having an audience or not having an audience. It's all, it's subjective. It's not, in fact, it's not really subjective. It's just a matter of how big the audience is rather than whether there is one or not. So I'd argue that you do have an audience. We do have an audience.
Okay.
It's just a case of size.
So we have no reliable data on this, but what do you think? I mean, there was one guy, he contacted us and he said something like, when are you guys going to put out the next episode? I already listened through all the published episodes like twice or something. I was just going to ask, like, do you think there's people that not necessarily follow us, but that have listened to each and every episode of the podcast?
I think for some people that's how they do podcasts. They find one they like and they go back to the beginning and listen to them all. I think, you know, in a sense, we're not really that qualified to talk about podcast audiences and things because we're, I don't know about you, but I don't listen to that many podcasts.
I have a few podcasts, a couple of podcasts I listen to, and they are mainly, for me, it's like something quite entertaining.
Yeah.
And all the podcasts I really enjoy are in the conversational style that which we have moved towards over the last couple of episodes. That's why I was in favor of doing that kind of style, because I enjoy listening to that kind of style as well. My favorite podcasts, or the podcasts that I regularly listen to, that I subscribe to, are The Talk Show by John Gruber, daringfireball.net. Tech podcast about Apple products. You have lost too many iPhones to still be in the game, but I'm still liking that stuff. So I like John Gruber's stuff. You know, they talk about technology, and then also I enjoy listening to the Accidental Tech podcast. Marco Arment, Casey Lin, and John Siracusa. John Siracusa being my favorite. Totally nerdy guy. Yeah. And of course, I mean, they're all nerds or geeks or whatever you want to call them. But it's really they have nice, also nice topics, like, you know, like net neutrality and of course Apple stuff and which computers to buy and interesting.
So you're more active in consuming podcasts than I am.
I think I do. I am. Yeah, I am. I have to admit that I enjoy the medium. I like it. And most of the podcasts I follow, I follow them not because they have such a compelling narrative, but you begin to get to know the people, the characters, and it's, I think either you like these people, you like the guys, and you like to listen to them, you enjoy listening to them, or not. And if they are, you know, so that's the main thing.
So let's have a little interlude. Have we talked about the, I know we often make reference to it, but the idea of being the, making a business, showing people how to make a business, showing people how to make a business. Is that what it was? What's that circular thing? An info product on how to make info products. Is that what it was? How to make money online by showing people how to make money online. What's our standard joke? Because of course, anybody who's vaguely entrepreneurial will have bashed against this at some point, that there's the people who are making the money from what everybody's trying to do, rather than actually doing something. So, joining us today, letting us into her hobo suitcase, is my fellow DC-er, Kimberly Rich.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Kim.
Thanks for having me.
Indeed, thanks for joining us. You are our second female hobo, so we feel very honoured to have you today.
My pleasure.
Splendid. So let's kick off with the questions. So what, in a sentence, is funding your hobo existence?
Currently, that would be the community manager position at the Dynamite Circle.
You keep us all in line.
I try.
you have the God button.
I try not to abuse it.
I should hope so too. Splendid. So where are you located at the moment?
Right now I'm in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Been here for about 2 months.
Nice. And you've been in Ho Chi Minh for quite a while before that?
Yep. I was in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh from about April until October. Definitely in and out a bit, spent some time in Japan and also Koh Tao for a little while as well.
So I think you earn your hobo medal
for I'll wear it proudly.
Relocation. Yeah. Marvelous. Well, let's skittle over to your luggage.
I'll try not to embarrass myself. Not as much of a hobo as some of our friends.
Hey, there's no winners in these interviews. It's just it's a general survey of who's carrying what and how they're carrying it and what they're not carrying and things like that.
What we're rolling, maybe?
Indeed. How we're rolling.
Exactly.
Yes. So, what's the average weight of your luggage?
Based on my recent arrival into Bangkok when I had a lot of fees, I'd say over 50 kilograms, actually.
Wow, I think you definitely win a medal now.
Can we cue the round of applause?
Yeah, round of applause.
We add that in later.
That is serious. That is like kind of, you have to travel first class before you get anything close to that kind of, in fact, I don't think first class would get you 50 kilos.
I know. When I left the States, I had a backpack and a carry-on. And then creating a home base in Saigon spoiled me. And somehow I accumulated another rolling bag. So that's how that comes to be.
Well, hobo heavyweight award goes to Kimberly Rich.
I'm really strong now, so there's some perks.
There are upsides, yes. So I guess that answers the second question. You are not cabin luggage?
Not right now, no.
No,
I can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stashing suitcases with friends can allow you to travel to different countries with only carry-on, but if I had to bring my whole life with me, no, not carry-on only.
I think that's the hobo secret. We're all stashing things in various places.
Yeah, that's the hack.
Although, you know, we like to say, hey, I'm a minimalist, I live and all my possessions fit in this tiny little 2 centimeter by 6 centimeter bag. The truth is we've got a coat here, a car there, a snowboarding equipment there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Snowboarding equipment had to stay in the States, but...
Yeah, mine's in Tokyo.
Oh, that's convenient. Good mountains.
Good mountains, yes. Yeah, this is it. You've got to get strategic. You leave the stuff close to where you need it.
Well, now that I know you're in Tokyo, maybe I can just ship over my snowboarding equipment.
Hey, don't get so cheeky. All right, one step at a time. So, next question. What's most likely to get you questioned by airport security?
As of late, no return ticket. I keep forgetting to get return tickets, which apparently you need in a lot of places. So yeah. the one-way, spur-of-the-moment trips that are the MO of a lot of DCers, that's not very good if they require return tickets, so they don't like that.
That's a little important hobo hack. Make sure you've got a fake return ticket,
yep.
At least.
Keyword being fake.
I'm sure there's some sort of Photoshop templates,
yep.
Somewhere. Maybe there's one on the DC. Start a new folder for fake ticket Photoshop templates.
Or the best place to get refundable tickets if you're trying to do it the right way.
The above board way.
Right.
Because we wouldn't like to suggest people do anything that's not strictly above board.
Yep.
Yes. Splendid. So, what's the most expensive and the least expensive thing that's worth carrying?
Ooh, most expensive? I'd say the most expensive thing that I have is my SLR, but it's not actually worth taking up the space now that there's better equipment out there. So I'd have to say my answer is the iPhone. You know, popping in SIMs in all the new countries and being able to take pretty good pictures and use the GPS and all the different messaging apps, I'd say that's the most used expensive item worth carrying. And then least expensive might be bug repellent wipes. It seems like in Southeast Asia, you need bug repellent pretty much anywhere you go. But if you're rocking carry-on luggage only, you've got some liquid restrictions to abide by. So carrying a few bug repellent wipes in your bag is kind of clutch.
Well, that's the first. I haven't heard. We've had Tiger Balm mentioned.
Ah, yes.
Maybe, I don't know if that's a sort of bug repellent as well.
I think it is. I think people have told me that. That's a secret.
Tiger Balm, I kind of feel like Tiger Balm just heals everything.
Yeah, it's like Windex. If you've seen that movie where they use Windex for everything, it's like that.
Yeah, like you've got a headache, Tiger Balm. You know, you've had a terrible motorbike accident and you're missing a limb, Tiger Balm. You know.
Tiger Balm, anyway. I like that, yeah.
So bug wipes, interesting, bug wipes.
Yeah, put that in your pocket for later.
Pocket bug wipes. In fact, nobody's watching on the camera because this is just audio, but I have next to me, you can see this on the video, Kim, these Japanese tissues, Mame Shiba tissues. Do you know what they are?
No. Are they bath wipes?
They are just general tissues. But what's interesting is the little sort of bean dog character, because Mame Shiba means bean dog.
Okay.
And they're like public information adverts that appear on Japanese TV. And actually, I'm not even sure if they're public information. It's just this kind of little bean dog appears like in a bowl of natto noodles or in someone's soup or in some peanuts or something. And it sort of says hello to the person in Japanese. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then it blurts out some little fact saying something like, every time you kiss, you exchange a billion germs with whoever you're kissing.
Oh, that's romantic.
And then the person kind of goes, oh. And then it ends. Mame Shiba.
Well, tissues seem like the suitable next step.
Indeed. To wipe, I don't know exactly how that's going to stop the germs, but anyway, from bug tissues to Mame Shiba tissues.
Least expensive, most desirable carry-on item?
Yes, that's why I brought it up.
Well, I know
thanks,
what to
Kim.
Give you if you're ever feeling sick.
Yes, that justified the mention
of something that nobody can see who's listening to this. Anyway, final question. What else might we like to know about your luggage?
Ooh, rolling all the way. I have a backpack, but I can't do backpack only. I'm all about dragging it behind me.
That is, in fact, a fairly recent invention. I don't know if you've read the book Antifragile by Mr. Taleb.
I have listened to part of the audiobook.
He mentioned the fact that luggage with wheels only came about in, I think, the 90s or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're perhaps a bit young to remember this, but I remember in the good old 80s, these intercontinental trips, you know, the kind of transfer in the, you know, New York airport or wherever it was, having to carry these really huge, horribly heavy, massive, inconvenient bags. And it, you know, you basically, if you didn't have a trolley, you were shafted.
Yeah.
Because it was just, you know, imagine carrying your 50 kilograms of luggage without rollers. That's what it was like for everybody. Until somebody, like, you know, the wheel was invented, what, I don't know, 20,000 years ago in Mesopotamia. I don't know where it was, but we've had the wheel for a long time.
I won't fact check you.
Luggage for a long time. You know, it took, you know, how many thousands of years of transport until somebody thought to put wheels actually on the luggage itself. And now, of course, everybody has wheeled luggage.
Yep, now it's like the most obvious thing.
Yeah. And not only wheels, you have some, I noticed, you know, you get some, I'm assuming your luggage is like this, you have these really big ass wheels, which can kind of, you know, like, almost like the four-wheel drive of wheeled luggage. You can go over any terrain. You're fine on the streets of Bangkok, aren't you?
Well, not only that, but they spin 360. So my bag doesn't have to be pulled in one direction. I can switch it all around, so.
Oh wow, so you've got a sort of multi-directional.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now you see why I can't say no. I have to have it.
Marvelous. Well, thank you, Kim, for letting us have a window into your wonderfully wheeled luggage.
Definitely. Thank you, Chris.
Yes. And I know I'm gonna have to drag you back in the future for some more questions about other aspects of your hobo life.
Perfect.
Yes. Splendid. Thank you very much. We were talking about the book Status Anxiety by Alain de Botton.
Yes.
And we gave a quick sort of 20 to 30 second summary. And you're saying, is that a good thing to do? Because maybe people don't know what we're talking about. They haven't read all the books that we've read.
Yeah.
Or maybe people already know this stuff and it's...
I'm wondering. I'm really wondering.
Well, I would say that it's unlikely that people have read everything that we've read.
That's...
You know, I've only read a fraction of the books you've read.
And vice versa.
So I think it's fine to do a little bit of explaining. Perhaps the deeper point you're getting to is, let's, for an abstract way of looking at it, but what level are people at who are listening? Are people at a similar sort of level, or are people at a very different level?
Mm-hmm.
So I would have thought the answer to that is, it's basically going to be self-selecting, ultimately.
Yes.
We're not going to try and do Hobo CEO for beginners.
Yes.
That's not really what we want to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm sure to a certain extent we will filter out people who are like too far behind on these topics. In abstract terms, this isn't really the best way to say it, but not at a similar sort of level.
Let's say they have too many unknowns as... it makes easy, as it would be easy for them to follow what we're talking about. Like if I'm listening to a developer's podcast, and these guys talk, you know.
Yeah, you're just going to get bored.
I'm just going to get, after a while.
But if you're a developer, it's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. But with definitions and explanations, that's an interesting thing. I mean, how educational do you want to be on the podcast? Is it our mission to educate our audience, or is it our mission to inspire our audience?
Well, I think it's fine doing these summaries and explaining things that we bring up. Because, you know, even after reading that book, Status Anxiety, I may forget the key points. So It's good if you or I, or it's good to kind of have them brought up again, just so they're fresh in my mind.
When we have the insights that we are having when we are recording the podcast episodes, we might be excited about them. That oftentimes wears off. Like sometimes Chris and me, we are sitting in the cafe and we're talking about something and we have this brilliant conversation, but of course we didn't record it on the podcast. So we hurry back and we hit the record button and we try to kind of talk about the same thing, but it doesn't sound the same, which brings us back to authenticity. It's hard to be spontaneous on the podcast, but with the conversational format, what we are aiming at, that's actually where it's fun. So the more everything is prepared and edited, the more it gets away from that kind of aha moments that we share together. Mm. And please excuse us if what happens to be an insight for me or Chris at the time of the recording is something really old and known for years to you, then, as Chris suggested, by natural selection, you might after a while get too bored with our insights and switch to listening to smarter guys.
We could maybe talk a little bit more about the hobo side of our lives. We tend to talk directly from the philosophical topics that we're thinking about. Maybe it might help frame things with a bit of the background. Because, for instance, we have extremely unusual lives socially. We've been through many different cultures. We have a very varying set of peers. You know, we don't have a constant peer group. You know, we're freaks socially. We have a very unusual life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, this is one of the reasons why we do this podcast, is because of the really unique position. Well, it's not that unique anymore, but let's say unusual position we found ourselves in, and because of the, I guess, relatively high point we are at Maslow's pyramid of needs, it opens up the possibility to look at things that normally we wouldn't be able to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Much in the same way that you said, Nicholas Nassim Taleb, the author of Anti-Fragile, in order to write that book, the guy needed to basically lock himself away in his attic and read for 5 years. He was a smart guy. He did well financially, so he was in that position to be able to do that. Such a benefit to mankind that he was in that position and he shared that knowledge, because the rest of us, you know, we're too busy trying to make a dime that we can't read all those books and we can't kind of dig through our minds and dig through history and dig through human experience to unearth some potential gems which nobody's seeing.
Talking about Taleb, two important concepts. He has what you just described, he calls fuck you money.
Yeah.
And there's this really cool interview, maybe I can dig up the link. There's this interview where he only rarely meets journalists because he hates journalists.
Yeah.
But he did this one interview and he talks about how he has fuck you money and he just doesn't care. He doesn't do shit for money. And the only thing he does is, I think even like he teaches at a university or college or whatever it's called, like it's a university. But he doesn't take money for it or what? Mm. Like he doesn't want to be on anybody's payroll.
Yeah,
that's what he means by fuck you money. And I reread the part about his not being late, punctuality, and he talks about redundancy, and that's the kind of buffer that he also has financially. But he said, like, after his resolution in 2007, he hasn't been late once. I think only once, but it was something really, really weird. So he shows up so early to every, I mean, first thing, he doesn't do a lot of appointments. He basically says he puts nothing on his calendar, because once he has something set on his calendar, like a couple of days ahead, he feels like a prisoner. Yeah. And you know, this guy's, he doesn't do any compromising. Like what you just said, that it's such a benefit for mankind. He says, because of the buffers he puts into meeting people, for example, the redundancy, the time buffers, he always has a notebook with him. And he comes up with all these aphorisms. And if you have been following his stuff on Twitter, I mean, not even to mention the book as a great work, but even like his Twitter, his short aphorisms.
Mm-hmm.
He says he basically writes all of that kind of stuff while he's totally relaxed, waiting for people to show up.
Yeah.
And that's wealth, my friend.
I don't think I've got quite that level of fuck you money, but I've got sort of piss off money.
Ah.
I've definitely got fuck you time.
Fuck you time,
and
yeah.
No shortage of time.
Yeah.
You know, anyone working at HSBC or Morgan Stanley or whatever has probably got a lot of money, but they're not going to be that free in terms of their schedule.
You have really reduced, I think we both have really reduced our liabilities.
Mm.
Way before we started doing the podcast, we had a nice, interesting discussion. I was just on the verge of moving into that hobo lifestyle, and you had already lived that for quite some time. And then you told me how big of a problem it was for you that somebody invited you to a wedding back in England, I think, and it was like a few months in the future.
Yeah.
And maybe it was a different event, but what you basically said is like, look, there's nothing on my schedule. I can do whatever I want. But if I fix that one date a couple of months in the future, it's gonna, everything is gonna, how do you say, everything is gonna drop from there? Like,
everything will stem from that date.
Yeah.
My whole life will organize itself around that date rather than being fluid and free.
Yeah.
It's like the whole, you know, the freedom comes cascading down and
exactly
collapses because of that single commitment.
Exactly. I guess there will always be somebody who is listening through all the episodes. Probably people will do it in the right sequence and order as iTunes suggests.
Yeah.
And if they come to this episode, I think it's quite funny I haven't gone through all the episodes in such, like if we would listen to all of the episodes, like let's say in a couple of days or within a week, I think there's quite a development in them. The way we, you know, what we did when we started out, how we tried to, and how we kind of started finding a different kind of style. Could be interesting.
So, change of topic. How are you moving over the next month? What's the hobo location for Nico?
I'm going to be in Thailand until February 12th. That's when my visa runs out.
Visa.
That's what, yeah. So it's
giving away your German roots.
Yeah. So, I have to leave the country, and I won't just do it for 10 minutes like I did a couple of weeks ago on one of those visa runs. But I will go to, we booked flights to Ho Chi Minh. So I'm going to relocate to
Vietnam.
To Vietnam.
Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam.
With the whole entourage.
The hobo entourage.
The hobo entourage. And then we're going to stay in Ho Chi Minh for a couple of days for nostalgic reasons, mainly. Go have a soup at each of the places we had we had soups. We're trying to stay in the same kind of neighborhood that we did. Maybe you have listened to the episodes when we are still recording from our rooftop terrace in Ho Chi Minh. That's when we started the podcast. Yeah.
Almost a year.
Yeah.
In fact, this is an interesting time to do this sort of reflective episode, because it has been a year since we started.
Exactly. Really very close to a year. And so we're going to be in Ho Chi Minh just for a couple of days. And then continue to Da Nang.
Da Nang is a beach town.
Mm-hmm.
Beach city.
Yeah. Supposedly quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
Less expensive than Ho Chi Minh. Less air pollution than Ho Chi Minh. A lot of people from that we know,
hobos,
other hobos, are gonna go there. And the main reason, by the way, is not only visa restrictions, but as you may or may not know, in Chiang Mai, in Thailand, at like around mid of February starts the burning season. When the farmers start to burn the rice fields. And that creates a lot of smoke. And since Chiang Mai is located in a valley, there's like for something close to roughly 2 months, there's a lot of smoke that gets trapped in the valley and it's not that nice. A lot of people say it's the like mid-February to mid-April might be the two worst months to stay in Chiang Mai. Actually, that's one of the main reasons we decided to go.
Buggering off.
And then we're probably gonna come back.
Splendid. Well, I'm a typical hobo CEO. Not entirely certain.
Yeah.
I do have flights booked, but it's not entirely certain. I'm due to go to Hong Kong and then back to Tokyo. But I'm still waiting for some visa paperwork to come through. So yeah. I might come to Ho Chi Minh City for a couple of extra weeks or something.
If it's
delayed. But we'll see. Maybe I'll stay in Hong Kong. Probably make more sense to come to Ho Chi Minh City since I know the gang there.
Just because we're mentioning planning and hobos, one of the... This is like, I'm just going to throw it in. This might be totally familiar to you or not. With people that live that kind of style, lifestyle, that's one of the main problems. Nobody really has very fixed plans. Like everybody is like, I may go there, I may leave, I'm not quite sure. And everybody's like, there's so many options and optionalities, and it's really hard to pinpoint people down. Like a lot of people basically have told me they're gonna go to Da Nang, but nobody, like only a couple of people are 100% sure about it. I may go to Ho Chi Minh, and if I like it there, and blah blah blah. I have to go to Bali, and if I like it there, and so everybody is like, as much as they can. I feel that majority of the people is already getting sweaty palms if they have to book the next flight.
Yeah,
and everybody wants to keep things open, keep it simple.
There is a bit of a flip side to having the completely open calendar. Too much choice is similar to when you go to a restaurant and there's a huge menu. You have this sort of paradox of choice. Mm-hmm. I think when you have so much freedom, you have this sort of paradox. It's often much more easy for our puny little human minds to just have the one or two options, like Apple versus the PC market.
Routine.
Yeah, routine. Like, as I'm planning to base myself in Tokyo for most of the next few years and just do sort of holidays.
Yeah.
Part of my mind is very relaxed because it's kind of got this certainty mapped out.
Like for me, and I'm always like, I'm also like traveling with my girlfriend. So it's hard enough if you do this by yourself and you keep things open. But it becomes really annoying sometimes if you have a bunch of people and you're trying to get them to the same place, kind of at the same time.
There's some rules for dealing with that.
There's some rules?
There's
or some
this
tools.
Is where strong leader tools, rules, rules. This is when you need to be a strong leader.
Yeah.
That's the solution to that situation. I've had years and years of experience of organizing groups, organizing people. And now I've kind of got that internalized knowledge of knowing how to make things happen.
True.
And when not to allow any sort of democratic input.
Mm-hmm.
When to be borderline obnoxious and
mm-hmm.
tell everybody what they're going to do despite any kind of complaint.
Yeah, that's a valid approach. Yeah.
Because you know, in you doing that, it's actually better than the discomfort when the group is sort of trying to democratically arrange itself. Anyway, that's a digression.
No, but that's good. That's a good point. It's a good point. So yeah, that's so much for our future plans and the lifestyle. Are we flaky guys then, or are we like? I think there's also like a fuzzy line about that.
Having the schedule open and not
And you, it seems to a lot of quote unquote conventional people, handling your schedule like this is like, yeah, you are kind of unreliable and, you know, like can't really count on you.
Well, it's kind of because it is unreliable.
It is.
This is where you've got to use your judgment. At some points, it is beneficial to make commitments, but at other times, it's not worth that investment.
It's very obvious if you look at this kind of lifestyle, how uncertain everything is. Mm. And I always like when I'm talking to people that have more routines and a fixed location and so on and so forth, they seem to be sometimes agonizing about the uncommittedness, whatever, of people like me. But they have a lot of uncertainties within their routine as well. It's just not as obvious. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? It comes out to the surface in our cases because it's very obvious, because everybody, like, where you are is always really obvious. People can ask you where you are, and for the other conventional people, they have a lot of things they have to decide on as well. They are just not that aware of it.
So you're saying that conventional people have a similar level of unreliableness or something?
Yes. Yes. And in our cases, because the changes are so, and the uncertainties are so much on the surface and obvious, it becomes more obvious. And if I talk to them or if they seem to be more fixed, even like from their perspective, but underneath the surface,
it's a fallacy. The thing is, they have regular commitments, like they have to go to work every day.
Yeah.
However, outside of that, maybe they're flaky. We have no commitments.
Yeah.
So it's just much sort of more, it seems much more flaky. Whereas in reality, outside of the regular things that it's just given that they have to do, they might exert a greater degree of flakiness than we do. They might cancel arrangements or be bad at choosing dates much more than we do.
Yeah. And they have sometimes under the surface variables, like stuff that is not obvious, but still creates a lot of uncertainties.
Like maybe they have no buffer.
For example.
We have lots of buffers.
Yeah. Obviously, there's also, it's open for how long we're going to keep this as it is.
The hobo lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder, because it's like, it's a difficult thing to go back from. Not in terms of the day-to-day living, but more in terms of the way we approach life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we might conceivably move to a city and set down some roots there for a while. But because we've changed our outlook, we're not going to think twice about just going off to Chiang Mai for 2 months or something.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to keep our lives structured in such a way that that's still possible.
And I forgot to mention, but when you asked me about my future plans, one of the other main reason why we're going to Da Nang is because we haven't been there. And you know, like, my main motivation isn't to travel and see places, but it's more like a side effect.
Mm.
And I feel that even like Chiang Mai is super easy. It's one of the easiest places probably in the world, according to a lot of people I have talked to find a place to stay, have good food, inexpensive food, all kinds of food, do, you know, all kinds of activities and so on. So it's a super easy place. It's really a, like,
paradise.
Yeah, it's really simple onboarding process in Chiang Mai. And but going other places, going to other countries, going to Da Nang, where I haven't been, is it widens my repertoire. It mm-hmm. expands my repertoire, and I think that's also a good thing. I haven't, like, when Christian, and by the way, I have a request from Christian and Max to be on the podcast soon.
Ah, cool.
So we have to come up with a topic where we can feature Christian and Max. And this is like me weaving in the narrative in the podcast. You have to stay tuned because we're going to bring on Max and Christian soon.
Yes.
This is just a preceding. but when Christian came over, he was with us in Saigon. He spent almost all year in Vietnam.
Mm.
Quick interlude, was at the conference in Bangkok and so on. Then he came back in December to Germany, and he stayed there for like 6 weeks. And when he came back, like when he flew back to Chiang Mai, I picked him up at the airport with a scooter. That's how easy Chiang Mai is. And one of the first things he told us was like, it was totally funny. When I got on the plane, I was not nervous at all. Talking about repertoire and, you know, like how you get into another set of routines. Mm. He said like, there was no stress. He knew, he packed everything he needed, and being, you know, on the gates, going through the street, everything really, he was so accustomed to it. So he said like, he could sleep like a baby because everything felt so normal. Even like arriving in Chiang Mai and everything, it's like, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. I wanna keep that up, like expand your comfort zone where that actually doesn't matter that much. Where you are and
become
flexible.
What's the word? At ease. At with ease. The world.
Yeah.
So there was a little anecdote I wanted to make from our point earlier on about having little concern about schedule or trying to avoid schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of the more hippie days of my past,
mm-hmm.
which I often allude to. I had this thing where if I was late for an appointment, it was for a reason. Like, you know, the universe had a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed always to work out. It seemed whenever I was 10 minutes late, the other person was 10 minutes late.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed that it just seemed to fit. Of course, there's the confirmation bias. There's biases in my mind which could make it appear in that way. But I was always very entertained by how kind of effortless it was when I didn't stress about being on time for meetings, being on time for whatever it was. More recently, I've learned to value punctuality and to kind of ensure that I have a buffer and I'm on time and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a sharp contrast from before, where I might be like 15 minutes late, but I still wouldn't run. I'd still walk at a leisurely pace,
mm-hmm.
because I just had this assumption that it was meant to be, that whatever was, it was going to work out. And I think there's still something very useful in that approach about being accepting and being at ease with whatever the situation was. And I don't know, maybe, as I said, it's just the confirmation bias that things seemed that worked out so well. Maybe they didn't. Maybe actually a lot of people were really pissed off and I just didn't notice. I think there's this thing about making arrangements and commitments in time, making it something that's more important than it should be. I think it's good to be able to have a certain degree of spontaneity in one's life, be mm-hmm. ready for it. Mm-hmm. And because often people are late, you know. If someone's late to meet me, I'm not going to get annoyed about it. That's the most stupid thing to do. It's better to be ready for that situation. And yes. Like Nicholas Nassim Taleb, to make the notes that you might actually use later on, or just to have something, you know, to be ready for that situation, to mm-hmm. be spontaneous. And it reminded me further of one of the sections in the book Anti-Fragile by the same guy, where he talks about the tourist.
I was thinking exactly about that. I wanted to bring it up.
Go on, bring it up.
You probably, since you have reread the book.
So maybe I should explain it.
Yeah, tourist. It's tourist versus
the flaneur.
Flaneur. So yeah, I have a rough idea, but maybe if
it's the idea that the optimal way to be a tourist is not to plan everything out, is to basically do things on a whim and adjust your schedule as you go.
Which is the flaneur.
Flaneur, yeah.
Yeah, and the tourist is the guy that has everything pre-booked, has to be at certain places at certain times to make...
To be on time for the ferry that goes to such and such, and then the restaurant booking, and then staying at that hotel.
Yeah.
So that tourist exposes themselves to a lot more
downside. You know, if some things go wrong in the schedule, it can mess everything up. Whereas the flaneur takes advantages of anything that goes wrong. Nothing can go wrong, essentially. It's like if the ferry's late, then they stay in the island for the next night. And maybe they end up meeting some locals at the bar, and then they say, hey, why don't you come to our farm that's 10 kilometers away? So they go and stay at the farm. Whereas the tourist would have no optionality. They would have no choice to deviate from their schedule.
Very good point. And I think we have to close the episode here.
Yes.
But as another devious way of proceeding, I'm really curious to talk to you soon about the topic of punctuality. So this is like our preparation for the next podcast. Mm-hmm. You have to think about that. Punctuality, the concept of tourist versus flaneur, and how that can be reconciled with making good estimates in terms of project management and running a business, where you maybe, like, basically one of the things we have to talk about is how much can you do the flaneur thing when you're running a multi-person team kind of business. That's what I would be really interested in.
Excellent.
All right.
Well, Herbos, stay tuned for the next episode one of the next episodes.
Where I'm looking forward to get my questions answered.
That's it.
Yeah.
Marvelous. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
See you.
Another amazing podcast magic production.